Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. Our guest is Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letter, and the only person who hasn't announced that she's running for governor of California. Joan Pryde, welcome back to the show.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't
you
want
never
to.
Never know.
Of course, you wouldn't want to go up against Arnold, would you?
Well,
I'd actually like to see that debate. I'd, you know what? I'd pay money for
I'll
that.
I'll bet you would.
I would pay money to see that debate.
You know, I think he's going to be an effective candidate. I was reading something he said on Leno, and it doesn't look like much on paper, but when he says it, I think, you know, because he said on Jay Leno, I will go to Sacramento and I will clean house. I mean, I think that sounds pretty... I'd be scared if I was one of those state legislators.
You'd be afraid. You'd be very afraid.
I'd be very afraid.
Well, but now here's an interesting observation of what you just said. You just said that he would be a very effective candidate. What kind of a governor do you think he would be?
Oh, well, hey, I don't know. You know, Ronald Reagan was an actor, and he did very well.
Yep.
I just don't know. He was also, well, I guess Schwarzenegger has been involved in politics as well.
To some degree.
He
certainly has his philosophy pretty well honed. Well, here's one thing, though. Here's the difference between a guy like Schwarzenegger and just another regular actor. This guy has crafted a career. So he's had to really run his own business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of actors do that, though.
Well,
nowadays.
But I mean, hasn't he been more in the vein of Sylvester Stallone, you know, doing a lot of his own production and writing and things like that?
But that's what I mean. I think a lot of actors end up getting into that nowadays.
Well, they do, but a lot of them, you know, aren't they just show up and do the acting. They don't, you know, they have their publicists and their managers.
I know, some of them are that
careers.
Way. Hey, if you think that translates into good government,
I'm straining here. I'm trying
I
to come up with a reason.
I can tell.
I'm trying to come up with a reason he'd be a good governor.
he's not Gray Davis. I guess that's what it is.
Let's go back to you brought up the presidential the greatest president of the 20th century, Ronald Reagan, and I think his success was he surrounded.
I didn't say he was. You said
he surrounded himself with good people.
Okay.
Didn't he? With effective people, and that's what Arnold's going to have to do, isn't it?
He sure will.
Yeah, but the thing now the interesting thing is he cannot have hopes and aspirations for becoming president.
Why not?
He's not natural born.
Oh.
Isn't that one of the requirements?
They can always change the law.
Yeah, that'd take a
they
constitutional
really want
amendment.
To. They though, almost did it for Henry Kissinger, so I guess they could do it for him.
I wouldn't have voted for Henry Kissinger. Well, what do you think? You think he's got a chance to win?
Oh, I sure.
Would you bet on him?
Would I bet on him?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't know about that. I'd have to see the whole field first.
Yeah. Well, they're climbing on, though, aren't they? They're piling on. The Democrats are piling on.
Oh yeah, everybody's piling on.
But you know, they kept hoping that no Democrat would actually throw their hat in, but they have now, haven't they?
Well, I think Bustamante, who is, I believe, the lieutenant governor, is going to run.
Right.
Now, Dianne Feinstein, a senator, has decided not to run.
Yeah.
And Arianna Huffington may run.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Now, that would be a dream. That would be a dream.
Arianna versus Arnold?
Yes.
You wouldn't need any last names.
I'd pay money for that, wouldn't you?
Arianna versus Arnold.
I would pay money to see that, no question. Joan, let's get into the letter because we're going to have more fun to talk about with the California thing as we get closer to the date. What is that? October 7th or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
I think so. So I'm sure you guys will be reporting on that.
Yeah.
What does Kiplinger say about the economic recovery? Is it real, or is it just going to fizzle?
Well, yeah, another turn of phrase. We ask if it's going to fizzle out. Well, we say that we are optimistic, as we often tend to be, but we
Pollyanna is the word that I prefer to use.
We do see an acceleration of growth in the second half of this year, and then really get going in the beginning of 2004. And I think you've seen some evidence this week of numbers coming out in the press talking about an increase in business spending, and that's what we're finally seeing, that sort of turn the corner.
Well, you know, Joan, when I look back on what's going on over the last 3 or 4 years, actually, going back to maybe like 95, companies forgot how to make a legitimate profit by really earning a profit, by operating efficiently, by going after solid business where a customer bought a real product or service and we delivered that real product or service and then we accounted for it properly. Many people, especially some of the big companies, forgot how to do that. And so over the last 3 years, they've had to realign their organizations to get them to where they can operate efficiently and in the 21st century marketplace.
Right.
They've had to account for their numbers properly, if not through ethics and just because it's the right thing, but to some degree by statute, and they're now realizing that they've got an organization that can do that because, as you know, profits are up.
That's it, yeah.
In general, corporate profits are up.
Yes.
And so I think now the companies are saying, okay, our organizations are back. We're fully back into reality organizationally and from a marketplace standpoint. And so now we can build on this, and I think that's what will happen. We'll build on it.
See, you're just as Pollyanna as we are.
Well, you're right. You're right. But you know what? The marketplace self-fulfills its own emotions, doesn't it?
Ooh.
Think about that. Now, you know, this is another thing, and you guys don't talk about that in your letter, but I know that you guys feel this way, and that is that business people are optimistic. We're pathological optimists.
Well,
we wouldn't be doing what we're doing.
Exactly. You would have to be to run a business, I think.
And so my point is when I say, you know, our emotions self-fulfill, and that is that if we feel negative about things, then our business gets negative. If we're positive, it gets positive. And so if the environment around us is fertile, more fertile than it has been over the next 3 years, and you add that those positive emotions to our activity, and that activity is planted in this fertile soil, then I think you got a 20-year recovery coming.
That would be nice.
20-year expansion coming.
Let's hope.
From my mouth to God's ears, right?
Right.
20 after. We're going to be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor at, let's see, candidate for California governor. That has a nice ring, doesn't it, Joan? 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and they're in their 80th year, celebrating 80 years next month, right, Joan?
That's right.
I'm going to be in your office celebrating that with you, aren't I?
That should be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes.
Joan, one of the things that you guys point out this week in the letter that shores up the things that we said earlier about the economy is the increase in capital spending. Tell us about that.
Right. And, you know, as we've been saying, that's kind of the linchpin of all of this. We're saying that capital investment rose nearly 7% in the second quarter, which I think is pretty good.
Folks,
what it's been like.
That is a monster indicator.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I mean, and this is what we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
This is what we've been saying all along. It needed to happen.
Capital spending hasn't been a lagging indicator, folks. It's been out of sight behind us.
Yeah.
I mean, who knew if we would ever catch up? And now it seems to have caught up. And so that bodes well, really, for the second half of 2003 and hopefully for 2004.
Right. Well, and that's what we're hoping, that we're going to have some momentum now, and so that this would accelerate into next year.
Yeah. Well, and we've got to, of course, we need some more good news from the rest of the world too. We need more good news out of Germany. We need them to get their stuff in a row over there and get their some of their inefficiencies out of the way, like some of their socialistic labor practices. We need Japan to get their banking fixed and start improving, or we need to start exporting more to China.
one of those things needs to happen.
Which the latter is going to happen.
Is possible, sure.
That is going to happen. But orders are up, too. You do say that managers, purchasing managers, are ordering more stuff.
Right, and of course that has its own domino effect, because then we talk about how that leads to more production, more sales, more profits, more jobs, and it's just sort of a good vicious cycle.
And labor, hiring folks, as you know, the stock market is a leading indicator of recovery.
Yes.
The hiring practices of businesses is a lagging indicator.
That's
except there is one little foretelling of good news in the labor side, and that's when companies start hiring temps. And that's happening, isn't it, Joan?
Yes, that's right. And that's something I think that's pretty widely watched, because a temp worker comes on board when you have, I guess, an increase in your business. You really need someone right away. Of course, they can come on for other reasons, too. But when you get that much of a surge in temp workers, that's, again, you know, another very good sign that businesses are spending money again.
We hired a temp recently. So one of our temps is in that number.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thanks for helping the economy. We appreciate it.
We're doing our part, and so is my wife when she goes to the mall. What about interest rates? They're up, and you guys say that's a good thing?
Well, I know that sounds strange, but our interpretation is that shows that investors are getting more confident about corporate profits. They've been in bonds recently, as you know, because they've been concerned about the stock market. But now there's a shift going on, and we think that's a good sign.
Yeah, that is a good sign. And of course, there was a little bit of jitters this week in the stock market because of the interest rates. But that, I think that was a temporary thing, don't you?
I think so. I mean, that's what we would say.
The government, Uncle Sam, is helping out the economy, isn't he?
Doing that pump priming.
Yep.
And it's working, I guess.
Billions, Kiplinger says, is going from the government into the economy. What's that looking like?
Well, and I know as a true blue conservative, you don't want to hear this, but, you know, we're saying that a lot of the jump in gross domestic product in that quarter that we were just talking about came from federal spending. Now, a lot of that's on defense, so you can attribute a lot of that to the war in Iraq, but it's spending nonetheless.
Well, and also that sort of also, explains some of the deficit spending, because sometimes, and this is the argument that people make in favor of deficit spending, sometimes deficit spending can be a good strategic move, can it?
Oh, no question about it.
Because it gets some of the government sort of helps prime the pump a little bit, as you say.
Right.
And so that's a good thing. But consumers, God bless their little hearts, they're still hanging in there, aren't they?
And, of course, we're going to be seeing evidence of that, or we hope to see evidence of that pretty soon when we see how all the back-to-school sales did. You know, that's the second most important sales period of the year for retailers.
Yep.
And they are really hoping that moms and dads are getting back to the store. I was at the Walmart this weekend, and it was pretty packed with people buying back-to-school stuff.
Yeah. Joan, I thought you were more of a Rodeo Drive kind of person. I just don't see you in Walmart, Joan.
No, it's very chic to go to Walmart and Target, places like that. Yeah,
so Walmart is becoming she-she?
Yes, it's been. You've missed the boat.
I guess I hadn't thought about it like that. I guess I need to. So could we think of, maybe we could be going there soon to have movie star sightings and things like that?
I would think in Hollywood you would, sure.
But the jobless rate is still a concern. It's, what's it, 6.2 now?
Right. I mean, as you have pointed out, that's not good, but unemployment is a lagging economic indicator.
Mm-hmm.
So we remain optimistic.
Well, and there also are some evolutionary challenges there that I want to talk about just a little bit when we come back after these messages. And then we're going to move into some other discussions, some other topics, as we continue our discussion with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
As if that streets are running and try to meet the masses, go get yourself some cheap sunglasses.
Do And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour.
Jim?
Mr. Gracious, Mr. Humble here. Joan
Jim?
Price. What, Joan?
Was that you yelling? Yow. Sounded like you.
It's good to be back with you, folks. Joan Pride is our guest senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'll never tell.
Is that your surprise?
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, I thought you might like some of the new music. Okay, let's talk about the jobless rate. One of the things I wanted to talk about there, Joan, I just want to remind people, when they look at this number, 6.2, that is actually a multifaceted number, isn't it, Joan?
If you say so, I'll believe
well,
you.
Yeah, all right, let me tell you why I say that.
Tell me why.
Part of it is because of the slow economy.
Right.
Part of it is because of the layoffs from the slow economy, et cetera, et cetera, and the deliberate pace that we're taking to get built back up again.
Okay.
But some of those numbers are permanent, meaning that the jobs that those people had in America don't exist
are
anymore
gone.
In America.
That's right.
And we'll never be back
That's
in America.
Right.
And so we've got a newly established element of unemployed people in America that until they get retrained and reoriented are going to be unemployed.
Now, and in fact, some of the, when we say these jobs are no longer in America, it's true some of them are overseas, but some of them have just vanished.
Well, that's right.
Due to automation.
That's exactly
so
right.
So it's not like they're somewhere else.
Well, as an example, I don't know if I mentioned this when you were on the show before, Joan. Did I tell you about the story about the my story about the paper company that I talked to? The guy said 10 years ago, this is a greenfield plant. It's a brand new plant.
Okay.
He said that I asked him if how many employees he had. He said 400. And I said, how many of those 400 use technology in their business, directly in their business? He said 100%.
Ooh.
But he said 10 years ago, this plant, it wouldn't have been so because this plant would have had 800 people, not 400 people.
Well, that's it. That's a perfect example
it
of
is.
What we're talking about.
And the other thing, though, Joan, is people are upset about the jobs that went to Mexico from here. Well, guess what? Many of those jobs not even in Mexico anymore. They're in China.
That's right. Oh, sure.
Or somewhere else in Asia.
Oh, yeah.
So they're bouncing around.
Yeah.
You know, we complain because the minimum, you know, the wage rate in Mexico was $2 or $3. Well, it's like 43 cents in China or something like that.
Gee.
And so those jobs are not going to be back. And so what I'm getting at is, I don't believe that a year and a half from now, Joan, or less 15 months from now, when we're having the next election, I don't believe that we'll have unemployment under 5% or much under 5%.
Wow.
I don't think it'll be back down to the 4% range, certainly, in 15 months because of that. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting that so many jobs could vanish forever that quickly because we had a 4% unemployment rate just a few months ago.
But a lot of those people were employed by the mania, the 1990s mania that was not based
true.
On reality.
That's true, yeah.
And so that's what happened.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move over and talk about the program that the Senate, you say, are going to nix importing drugs from other countries.
Right. Now, just so that your listeners understand, we're not talking at all about the Medicare drug benefit bill.
This
is something that Congress is still working on, and we still believe will get done in a few months. This is legislation that would make it legal to import generic drugs, which people are already sort of doing illegally now, say, from Canada. Because drug prices are so much cheaper there.
Is this like vitamin V, too? Does this include vitamin V?
Vitamin V.
Viagra?
Oh, I would think so. I don't know. It depends. Is there a generic for that?
I don't know.
You would know better than I would.
I wouldn't know. I just heard about it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that the drug companies, of course, hate the idea of drug importation. But there was a renegade band of actually Republicans in the House that forced a vote.
Those nasty Republicans.
In favor of this bill against the leadership's wishes. But now we think that bill, at least for the moment, is going to run aground in the Senate.
Well, there are a lot of drugs that are available in other countries a lot less expensively than they are in the U.S. that people are actually going to Canada to get some of these drugs, aren't they?
That's yeah, exactly.
In Mexico, I mean, I know people are going to Mexico for some of these
things.
So, well, speaking of drugs, what about an FDA-approved cigarette? I don't understand that. What is that?
Well, what we mean by that, we're not saying that the FDA wants to approve cigarettes. We're saying that the authority to determine whether cigarettes should be allowed on the market may be given to the FDA, which would be huge.
Wow, that is huge.
Yep.
I'd like to listen in on that deliberation and see what they decide. Maybe even contribute to that a little bit. 20, no, actually, yes, 20 till. I'll take a quick break. We're going to be right back to talk about your 401k plan. What Kiplinger has to say about that right after these messages.
I'll soon be with you, my love.
We're back. It's 17 till. Let me remind you about our show coming up straight ahead. We've got me. That's right. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to continue our discussion on how to get a loan from a bank. Then after that, our technology guru, Alan Friedman, will be joining us. And then Wayne Cruz is going to talk to us. And he's got some news from the FCC on unsolicited faxes, fax spam. And he's going to talk to us about that. And then we're going to talk about personal and business branding with our good friend Peter Montoya, one of our branding experts. And that's coming up in the show straight ahead. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, the website is Kiplinger.com. That's where they can subscribe to the four letters, which includes the flagship letter, now in its 80th year, the Kiplinger letter, which is weekly, and then the biweekly letters, the tax letter, the California letter, and the agriculture letter. But once a month, you guys have a magazine.
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Why don't you give us that toll-free number?
Sure. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And folks, I encourage you to go to the site itself. There's a lot of free information on the site, but also that's where you can subscribe and get the 30-day free trial. They'll send you the publication for a month and let you try it out, and if you decide you don't like it, then you just tell them that you don't like it, and then they'll stop sending it to you. So check that out when you get a chance at Kiplinger.com. Joan, the IRS is up to no good with our 401ks. What's up
with that? Well, you know, they're always looking for ways to close some loopholes. And I wouldn't call these loopholes necessarily, but two techniques that employers have used are being shut down. One is called bottoming up. It involves, employers have to be careful that they pass certain tests, their calculations every year, that make sure that the advantages of the 401k aren't going skewing toward the high-paid workers.
Mm-hmm.
And the one way they found around this was to just give an employer match to a few low-paid workers, and that allows the high-paid workers to put more of their own money into their accounts
mm-hmm.
to max out their contributions. But now the IRS says that kind of is unfair to the people sort of in the middle, so that they're insisting that the match be even across the board if you're offering a match.
They're always checking on us, aren't they?
Yep. And the other one is kind of weird. It involves kind of switching around your fiscal year, even moving it by one day, so that you can, if you want to max out employer matches and offer them all at once, offer them at the beginning of the year. But if you switch that fiscal year by one day, it can be counted in the prior year, and you get a bigger deduction in that year.
They're just taking all the fun out of stuff.
I know.
They're just such party poopers, the IRS.
Sorry.
Well,
nothing we can do.
Yeah, I know it. What about, let's move over to page 3, Joan, and talk about MCI. That's been in the news lately, and because MCI, there's been a controversy about MCI emerging from bankruptcy, having been the former WorldCom, emerging from bankruptcy and actually being more competitive now without this debt that they've shucked through bankruptcy, and being able to compete more effectively with some of the competitors who are paying their bills on a regular basis.
Well, you know, in the old days, the good old days, MCI was just MCI. And then it emerged with WorldCom and became WorldCom. And then when WorldCom had all the bad press and the scandals and everything, they decided, let's call ourselves MCI again.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're emerging from bankruptcy. In fact, I think there was just news today that a settlement has been reached that will allow it to emerge from bankruptcy. Its competitors are getting very worried because, as you point out, it will be it will have gotten rid of its debt by going through the bankruptcy process and be stronger than ever.
Mm-hmm. But even if the what you're pointing out this week is even if the competitors are successful in affecting the settlement and to when as they emerge from bankruptcy, it shouldn't affect their customers.
Right. We don't think phone service will be interrupted. That's correct.
What about an energy bill? The president's talking about an energy bill this week.
Well, you know, this was something that we didn't really see on the radar screen that we didn't think could make it, but now it's looking much, much more possible. In fact, we're saying it's certain that both parties want it very badly. You know, there's tax breaks in that bill, which the Republicans want, so that'll be important.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll encourage more oil and gas drilling, so that's another plus as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to, we've got to come to grips with this, Joan, and we've got to be realistic about this. America, if I'm not mistaken, Joan, I think you guys even reported this. I think this is where I got this from, that we're going to be more dependent upon foreign oil in the future than we have been. We're going in the wrong direction, Joan.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened because, you know, after the oil crisis, the energy crisis of the late 70s, we really all got religion and really changed our ways. But, you know, I think the rise of the gas-guzzling SUVs turned things around again.
It's multifaceted, Joan.
True.
I love that term. And the reason, but one of the facets is what you just said. The other facet, remember when oil got so low and we reported on the show 2 or 3 years ago when oil prices were down under $10 a barrel?
Oh, yeah.
And I said that we've got this as a national security concern because a lot of the low-producing wells were actually capped forever because of that, because they couldn't even make enough money to pay the maintenance on the pumps.
That's right.
So we lost some production there.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, Joan, we haven't built a new refinery in America in over 20 years.
Wow, that's a heck of a long
time. Think about that. And how long has it been since we've done any new exploration in America?
Well, probably a long time.
A long time. So we've got to realize that our consumption's gone up. Oh, and by the way, Joan, I saw somewhere recently that by 2050, I think it is, America is supposed to have something like 400 million people. Did you see that?
No. 400 million?
I think so.
What happened to zero population growth?
I've forgotten the year. I remember, though, when I saw how near it was, it took my breath away.
Wow.
And we've got to figure something out. Maybe hydrogen is the answer. I don't know. 10 till. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with our good friend, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're back. It's 7 till. We're getting jiggy with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors.
You know, there's like 9 million new songs out, and you have to pick. That's the only one in your repertoire.
We picked that one
just because.
Made
after 1970.
We picked that one on your behalf, Joan. Okay. What about nuclear, Joan? What's the deal on that? Are we going to have some new nuclear?
Sure, yeah. Well, actually, seriously, yes. Part of the energy bill will allow some new financing for nuclear plants, which, you know, 20 years ago you wouldn't have been able to imagine that happening, but it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. I got to get our hydrogen folks back on the show to talk about that. The folks who are working on that, they ought to have some new developments. I haven't talked to them in about 6 months or so. Joan, let's move over and talk about you're our currency expert. Let's talk about exchange rates. Is a dollar going to stay weak?
Yes, it will. I don't expect it to strengthen. I don't expect it to strengthen against other currencies. Well into next year. Now we're saying it's not going to go into free fall, so the bottom isn't going to drop out of it. But it's not going to gain strength anytime soon, certainly.
Mm-hmm. And this is a good thing for our recovery, really, in a lot of ways, isn't it, Joan?
Well, it sure helps our exporters.
Well, it hurts the consumer because the goods coming in are more expensive.
Right.
But it helps the exporter because it makes our products more valuable, more efficient, and cheaper overseas. And so let's see, Joan. Consumers seem to be doing okay. Exporters and manufacturers and exporters are having a tough time. So this is a good thing for the economy, right?
Bingo,
People are complaining, you know, some people are taking the government to task because the dollar's weaker, but, I mean, it makes perfect sense to me.
Well, you know, there's two ways to look at all these things, and there are downsides to having a weaker dollar, but there's also, as we know, downsides to a strong dollar. So this may be good for the economy right at this point.
The manufacturing sector, and not even manufacturing, Joan, because more and more of our exports are not manufactured. More and more of our exports are service exports.
That's right. That's a good point.
And so we've got a lot of that going on, and what's going to be happening is we're going to continue to export more services to China, for example, financial products, entertainment products to China, and they're going to be sucking those products up like crazy and sending us back manufactured products.
That's right. Happening now with so many different things. Furniture is a great example.
So here's what we do, Joan. We get them hooked on our stuff when it's cheap, right?
Yes.
And then once they get hooked on our stuff, then we raise our dollar.
Oh, good plan.
We raise our dollar, and then when their stuff comes back to us, it's cheaper.
Why don't you call the Treasury Secretary?
The Secretary Snow and I've already had
Got
this
it.
Conversation.
Good. Good.
Yeah. In fact, I'm sure you know all my plans are right on track here. Joan, let's talk about the war on terror. What's the news there?
Well, at this point, we wrote this week about the intelligence agencies that we're saying that they will get better coordinated. As you know, they weren't very well coordinated around September 11th, and there were a lot of problems. There's been a lot of controversy as to did we know about the threat ahead of time? Was the threat well communicated throughout the government? And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done there.
Well, but the thing is, though, as you guys say, that they will never actually march to the same drummer, but it's getting better. But you're kind of negative about the chances here that the CIA and the FBI and all those guys will really get together.
Well, there's just so many different threads here because you have the CIA and the FBI, you have local law enforcement. You know, to get them all on the same page, I think, is very hard. And it would seem to me, you know, you've been around long enough to see how turf battles crop up among different agencies, and the CIA and the FBI are no different.
Joan, let's talk about Saudi Arabia in the 40 seconds we got left. The president's putting some pressure on them, isn't he?
That's right. You know, there's this whole brouhaha over this report on the Saudis' role in September 11th, and he refuses to declassify it. And they want it released because they believe it exonerates them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to believe that they might not want to wish for that.
Yeah, because I'm having trouble
believing
it exonerates them.
I'm not so sure it's going to exonerate them. I think maybe they're whistling past the graveyard on that one. Nope.
Yeah.
But
not in reality there.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's an interesting group of folks. I'll tell you, the more I know about what they've done, I talked to a guy from Africa. He told me about some things that the Wahhabi folks did in Nigeria that just took my breath away.
Oh no!
And so they're no strangers to funding terrorism. There's no question about that.
I believe it.
Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next week.
That sounds great.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program really is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.